the Vox Markets Podcast.
Welcome to Ticket Stock. It's the 13th of September, 2023. I'm joined by Cashmere John today. He's casual in a logo T-shirt. I don't know what it was. I asked you what it was, John, but what is it?
Space Navigators Guild from June.
Sorry, how old are you?
Old enough to have read those books a long time ago.
Yeah. If you tuned in, thanks for tuning in, by the way. And, you know, hit that subscribe button if you haven't already done it. And by all means, get your comments. We've had GDP figures out, John. So I'm saying this is it's below forecast, but we are heading for a recession. That is not a bad thing. That's what the Bank of England want, essentially. And when they see that, what will follow will be a softening in prices, inflation. And so I don't know if you look back at, in fact, someone commented yesterday, and when an official recession is announced, the market tends to do well, because the stats out there saying 6 to 12 months before recession is the worst drop off. The markets are ahead of it. As far as they can see ahead, they get ahead of the data. And so when it's not going to get any worse, it starts to get less worse and then better eventually.
Yeah, I saw a funny graph, though. I mean, we've been sort of bouncing between periods of contraction and periods of expansion.
Yeah.
For quite some time. So, you know, I know recession is technically two consecutive quarters, but if you look at the economy, it's been sort of slowly losing air for quite some time.
Yeah.
You have these periods where you know, the coronation or a period of good weather sort of slightly lifts it above naught, and then you have what we had in July, which is a period of kind of crappy weather, which dipped it below. So, oh, and strikes, of course. So, yes, the economy has been, you know, really sort of wading through treacle for some time.
Look at this, though. FTSE 100 is all down. It's all down today. A third of 1%. FTSE 250, half of 1%. FTSE AIM All-Share is the best performer. It's down, but it's 0.14%. Some of the risers in the FTSE 100 are the house builders. Insurer there, but Barclay, Persimmon, Taylor Wimpey, HSBC, Barclays, Barrett Developments. Why is that?
Redrow had some results out today.
One of the biggest
house builders. And again, you know, as we're sort of starting to see, we had that warning from Crest Nicholson, which increasingly looks like, you know, there were more company-specific factors behind that than just the weak market, because these numbers are okay. Profit was down, but only by 4%. There was a really interesting snippet in the interview that Paul Hill did yesterday. I think it was published yesterday with one of the fund managers at Artemis.
Yeah,
there's a really interesting segment in that about the house building sector, which I would encourage everyone to go and have a listen to. But you know, this guy's thesis is basically the one that we've talked about before, which is, you know, we have a structural deficit in homes in the UK. Yeah. So, you know, 1 year of weak demand is just essentially storing up that demand for the future when the sort of mortgage market improves and, you know, people's finances start to improve. So, you know, there is a case that this is a value seeker's paradise. But I would go back to the point that I've made before, one that we sort of saw with Vistry's strategic shift, is that actually I think the whole market is going to have to change and focus much more on delivering affordable housing.
Yeah, well, it's got to be, isn't it? I mean, if you can't afford housing, there'll be no housing. So, that's the Redwood chart. I'm like a broken record here, but house builders don't seem to be going any lower than they did when they hit in October 2022. They're bouncing around yet in a range.
It's a little down trendy channel there, though. I mean,
it's breaking up. Look, if you look at the 200-day moving average, right, it's tried to get above that a couple of times, broke up. Now it's done it a couple of times. But you see the 200-day moving average flattening out. That means the price pretty much is stabilizing. And so we may have to go sideways for a long time. I'm not saying it's down then straight up, because, you know, you have to have the end of a downtrend and then you need, you know, to consolidate a bit, then to start an uptrend. So that's a bad one. Look at these numbers here, right? This is what the Bank of England want. Now, ignore the forecast, because, you know, the market is driven by the forecast and what, the sort of economics gurus say, the economists, but they always get it wrong. But look at the previous. Of all these, is GDP 1.6 to minus 5, 4.6 to 2.8, this is construction, right? GDP, 0.5 down to minus 0.5. So you've got 0.9 in year on year, almost 1% down to nothing. You know, it's all from the previous readings going down. It's slowing down. The economy is slowing down.
Oh, big time,
this is what the Bank of England want. They want this. They're strangling the economy. But it'll get to the stage where, you know, there will be political outcry because people are suffering. They are now. And but I think, you know, if prices don't continue to go up, when you have a recession, they do come down, and that's what they want to see. But so I think, you know, one more. The light is at the end of the tunnel, ladies and gentlemen. It's been a long, hard journey on this train. It's like it's Kim Jong-un's train. Have you seen that? 37 miles an hour that train went. It was bulletproof and all that. 37 miles an hour, you travel for days. But it's almost like we are seeing the light at the end of the tunnel as far as interest rate hikes are concerned. And yeah, the economy get worse, but don't get confused between the economy and the markets. As far as the markets can see ahead, they will try and do that. Of course, there's one-off things like the COVID dash for cash crash when, you know, we had lockdown and they couldn't really see that coming. But, you know, generally the markets do look ahead. It's not the economy. It's what's going to happen to the economy. That's what it looks at. So I'm a little bit bullish. I think we are going to get a Santa rally like we've never seen before. That's what I think.
I'm not going to make any predictions like that. I do think, you know, there is truth to that. But, you know, sometimes recessionary effects are not built into company forecasts and the market's forecasts are too ambitious. So I do think there is some earnings risk out there still.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, it's a stock market. That means a market of stocks. Mm. So you've still got to be a stock selector. If that's what you want to do, select stocks where you think won't be hit by these, you know, headwinds of higher interest rates and a slower economy.
True. But equally, but yeah, ABF, yes, they upgrade its profit guidance. You know, it's really sort of very consumer dependent. So on the beach today, you know, up 16% as I look at that. Really strong numbers.
Well, what do they say there? Let's look at on the beach. Yeah. Well, do you know what? Let me look at that. I did get into them around here on the uptrend. I thought, ooh, here we are. I literally started rolling over. They came up with results and just dipped down there. Got out. I think I took a little bit of a small loss there. But as you can see there, look at that. That previous high in the chart, which is at sort of 120, is trying to get above that. That's a gap here. The tends goes, to refill that. So plenty of time there on that. Let's look at the front page of Vox here. Hummingbird at value inflection point as production ramps up there, and they've upgraded the resources, haven't they? I think on the two mining areas.
One of them, I think it was.
Oh, okay. This is
shares off.
You know what? If you're looking, I got a filter for like 52-week lows. I got filters for everything about our charts. But I was watching this for a long time. I did put these marks in before it happened, and the Hummingbird went down for a long time. And they did have a couple of problems, you know, geographical problems, and, you know, obviously weather problems as well that hit them. But when you get this from an oversold position on some stocks, you tend to rally very strongly, you know, and they did it here. Mm. And that the first almost bounce from the massively oversold position is the fastest. And if you've been watching a stock and researching for a long time and you time it well, you can get some good returns on a massively oversold position. But I would only do that on companies who know it's, you know, generating cash, getting better. You can do it technically only, but there's a bit more risk to that.
Yeah, I thought out of interest, you know, I'll have a quick look at the FTSE 350 precious metal sector performance. It's pretty. This is the trend. This is the kind of graph that you would expect to see across the sector. It's really funny. Again, it just goes back to what we talked about before, that, you know, the gold price has been relatively strong, but the performance of miners, which you would expect to be a leveraged play on the gold price, have been weak. And again, it's an inflationary problem, the cost of production problem.
Yeah. And also, you know, with other commodities, you've got China, you know, like I said, they didn't reopen they didn't bounce, and they're struggling a bit. And they said they gobble up half the world's commodities. So when China's weak, commodity prices are weak.
That should be less the case with gold, though, of course. And, you know, there has been a lot of sort of central bank gold buying in recent years. You know, particularly non-Western central banks.
Yeah. You know, definitely central banks snapping that up. Canovo lands $4.8 million deal. Director Ward and are they up today? Are they rising?
You would have thought so. Let me. Look what it is, sorry, I've just come off that page.
It's a good trend.
No, really moves today, but, you know, we've spoken about this company before. It's in all the right spots. This is the sort of renewables, the sort of decarbonisation efforts. Yeah. Well, you know, big sort of framework contract. You know, and it's basically in the right place when it comes to kind of working with local authorities.
Yeah.
Funnily enough, strangely, I know the chief exec, went to university with him.
Oh, really? Okay. Supreme, which Paul has a bit of a commentary on this, they've come up with some news. Supreme, of course, they are one of the major distributors and sell these vapes, disposable vapes, which come under a lot of pressure recently, saying Scotland are going to try and ban them and all that stuff. And they do say, by the way, that they welcome government action on this because, you know, they're not a fan of, you know, shoppers targeting teenagers and all that thought. It's basically helping people achieve a smoke-free 2030. That's an initiative by the government, by the way. Get off fags on vapes.
It's a tricky one, though, because, you know, with vapes, I guess the worry that the government Department of Health has is that you're replacing one problem with another. And that, you know, if these products are being used by people who otherwise wouldn't be able to smoke cigarettes, i.e. underage smokers,
yeah,
all you're doing is that they're a gateway into smoking, which you know, obviously isn't solving the problem.
What I don't understand is this: if they are for ex-smokers vapes, then why do they have such colourful, you know, packaging? Why is the flavours, you know, appealing to kids and with sweet flavours? Why not just have, you know, tobacco and grey, and that's it.
Plain packaging was a solution that you know, the cigarette industry went down. You know, so, you know, cigarette advertising was banned. You know, packaging was made plain. There's no difference in how one packet looks from another. You know, they've got all sorts of horrible images on them, and they're hidden behind the counter.
Yeah,
behind screens or under the counter. So, you know, a lot of these measures may come before there's an outright ban on vapes. I think one of the worries that's been raised is that if you ban something, in this case, if you ban single-use vapes, then essentially you push the problem underground as well. You know, this is why there is a regulated gambling industry, because without it, you end up with, you know, with the Sopranos running your gambling industry. And that's much less palatable and untaxable. So you know, there are plenty of...
What do they say? But if you are an ex-smoker, right, and you want to give up, you go to the doctor, get a certificate or something, and then you can buy a vapes. Anyone else can't. That's the way it's going. Make them colourless, make them tobacco flavour only, and then... you'd find that would help, wouldn't it?
I suspect, you know, this will be the route that will be preferred before an outright ban. I mean, I actually think the main problem is really the environmental one. I mean, yeah, anything single use is problematic, and in this case, it's a single use product that contains, you know, really hard to recycle materials like lithium ion in the batteries, which obviously you need to heat the liquid that's within them. So, you know, the environmental pressure, I would say, is even stronger than the kind of health pressure.
I mean, ever I go, I'm seeing there's bars on the floor, you know, in parks and so that. Anyway,
what Supreme are doing here is, so, you know, as well as having a very, you know, very stringent sort of supply chain management to ensure, you know, compliance with age regulation, they're sort of shifting or trying to shift towards, they've got a new product launching, which is rechargeable. And obviously, rechargeable products will be more expensive and you won't dispose of them quite so. Really nearly.
Anyway, they're saying they will hit expectations there. Company compiled analyst consensus is announcement EBITDA, adjusted EBITDA of 25.6 million. And they are, 113 million market cap.
Yeah, remember,
they've got
other strings to their bow as well, remember. Yeah. They do, you know, batteries, lighting products, sports nutrition. So, you know, if they can sort of head the sort of government concerns off at the pass, and that's the action that they're taking, then it all should be all right.
Yeah. Paul Begg, I chatted to Paul Begg today, Jeremy Skillington from Paul Begg. What I like about that, they've got lots of irons in the fire there, lots of opportunities, a lot of big potential. But more essential than that is when you are a pre-revenue loss-making company, you have plenty of cash. And they have plenty of cash. So literally, they've got about 3 or 4 years worth of runway, essentially, on the cash they have, which is, you know, very encouraging, isn't it, you know?
Yeah, but they don't burn through it at the rate that, you know, you have perhaps seen some sort of pharma groups burning through cash in the past. What was their, they ended the year with 14.1 million from 16.2. So, you know, half a year. So they've only spent 2 million in the quarter, which, you know, considering the amount, as you say, of irons they have in the fire, that's a pretty good effort. And you know, they're using, we know that you're sort of working with HVivo from the same stable, using human challenge trials to really you know, expedite their development programs. They're working with AI to really get things, you know, very, very targeted and very, very, you know, efficiently managed. So I mean, it's, you know, it looks like increasingly this looks like the model for small cap drug development.
Yeah, and Pario, I mean, interviewed it a while back, I think, or they came on the podcast years back, but they were a half-year report out, and then sort of what they say, manufacturer of natural sustainable animal feed additives for animal health. Now, if I remember rightly, a big part of the market is in China, and I think they've suffered a little bit because of that. But they do say here, United States and Australia was offset by declines in Asia Pacific, Europe, and Latin America. So
I mean, it's important. You know, we spoke about Ocean Harvest yesterday.
51. Yeah.
So you know, this is an important sector. You know, as I said, we like meat as a species. You know, it's hard to imagine that there is going to be any reversal of that. I haven't looked at the stats, but I would imagine that meat consumption year on year increases every year. And a lot of that's driven by emerging markets where demand for protein is increasing in line with wealth. But there are problems with the kind of food chain. One of those problems is antibiotic resistance. Mm-hmm. You know, so you put antibiotics into animals to make sure, you know, they stay healthy so that you can increase your yields, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But that passes its way through the food chain into humans and then causes antibiotic resistance. So, you know, this is a company trying to solve that problem.
They're not far off 52-week lows, in fact, multi-year lows. And they've had a bit of a problem here, but I've put an alert that if they break that 246, maybe it's an uptrend here. But what's the, so 15 million in sales, say 30 million total, adjusted EBITDA, run about 2 million. 40% decrease in profit before tax. So, but like I said, if that turns around, if China starts, improving a bit, then that could make all the difference.
That's true. That top line is going backwards a bit, but some of that's due to outside factors. But there is still a bottom line, you know, that's always something I look out for. This is a company that's making money. Interestingly, what it said was that, you know, it's been able to pass raw material price increases on, particularly in the higher value products that solve some of the bigger problems that farmers, livestock farmers have. So, you know, there are some sort of signs that you know, the demand for its products is there. You know, particularly the higher value products that solve some of the worst problems. Without heavy use of chemicals as well.
Yeah, Michael says, I work for a well-known travel company, not listed, that has been around for 60 years. 2022 and 23 was our record profit year, and we're 30% up on that this year so far. OTB should be pounds. Yeah, I don't know. Listen, I like OTB, and I liked, you know, like I said, I remember all the advertising campaign. They're going hard because people after COVID wanted to go on holidays and stuff. And they had lots of cash. And then they, you know, I thought they were going to motor like hell. And they didn't. They started actually going into debt.
It's funny, isn't it? It's funny.
They must have spent a lot on advertising, put it that way. So, I'll keep an eye on those because I do sort of like the chart. They're coming down to that. But anyway.
Well, do you remember yesterday? I think it was yesterday. We spoke about, you know, the Heathrow figures. And you know, the sort of record numbers going through the airport, and you know, in fact, a lot of the airport problems that they'd had last year with this, you know, disruption have been overcome. So you know, the implication being that look at those numbers, and then look ahead to today's announcement from on the beach, and you could have probably guessed that they were going to put out a good statement.
Yeah. What I would say is, how much of that, Matthew, is reflected in price increases because of costs have gone up. Because I know the price of holidays did go up massively. You know, we were looking at holidays we used to go on, and they were up like, you know, I'd say probably 30%, more than that. And one place we went to was crazy. It was in Mexico, right? Lovely place in Mexico. We looked at it, and the price, this is just after COVID, the price was 80 grand.
Mm.
80 grand. I thought, what? Who's this? And then we thought it was a glitch on the website. So we went back and looked at it. But even now, even going back now, it's still double what we paid for it in like pre-COVID. So the reflection of the prices. So, and I suppose fuel has gone up, hasn't it? A lot of costs have gone up within the holiday industry. So, and in fact, a lot of that is recruitment, isn't it? It said they've had to bring a lot more people on board and train them up and all that. So there's been a lot of issues with that. So, yeah, I don't know if costs have gone up as well. But they say
they would have done.
Yeah, segment marketing costs for the full year. At 40% of revenue, they say. It's a bit less. They did spend more on marketing.
But then just look down there. You've got, you know, summer 23 passenger numbers 11% ahead of last year. So you know, it's not just pricing. There is volume going through this market as well.
Okay, so maybe worth a watch that chart there. Okay, what else does someone say? Card Factory. I think this is an easy double, especially once they announce a dividend steal at today's price. Yeah, I don't... But, stocks don't double on just dividends, do they? Announcements, I don't think.
The shares are bloody cheap. I mean, you know, what's it? Forecast PE 2024, less than eight times earnings.
Yeah, but I mean, are they pricing in like a lack of growth here? Are they expecting to grow further? I mean, what are they doing?
They
come from a massively oversold position and they've rallied strongly, but can they continue? Can the top line continue to grow? Or is it, you know, competitors are struggling.
Top line forecast up 10% this year. Pre-tax profit forecast 60 million, which would be about 14.5% higher than last year, you know, which on a sort of peg basis, actually the EPS is lower, but. You know, it's still growing.
So what's the market have 356 million. What's their profit going to be, they reckon?
60. Oh, look, yes, I am. 60 million pre-tax in 2024.
Yeah. I'll discuss that. I don't think it's going to go... it's going to break that level there. If it does go above, 112, 130, it may do. I quite like that, actually. It's settling. It may do it, but I don't think it'll double. I'd be surprised if it doubles to 600 million. Market cap on those figures. I'd be very surprised.
I mean, there's a fair chunk of debt in this as well, you know, and this is the thing with retailers that, you know, really to double the share price, you know, so selling more with the same is very, very difficult. So,
yeah,
you know, they're rollout stores really. So it's you know, what's the rollout potential of card factories?
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know the answer to that. I'd have to go away and have a look at it. You know, on a similar note, you know, I was looking at Loungers this morning. I don't know if you've ever had a look at them or been in one even.
What are they?
They're a sort of, I don't want to call them pubs. They're a sort of restaurant, you know, group.
I've never heard of them.
Oh, they're really good. Honestly, as a customer, they're absolutely brilliant. I would highly recommend them.
In fact, there's a piece from Victor Zala piece here, hasn't he? Six innovative companies leading the rebound of the UK hospitality. I'm glad to see, you know, XP Factory in there, Loungers in there, Brighton Pier.
Brighton Pier is interesting. It's Luke Johnson. It's you know,
entertainment and XP Factory. Yeah, I think
you know.
Do you know what? I think there is opportunity amongst these companies because if they are different and providing a different offering, and I know XP Factory does, you know, with Boom Battle Bar and escape rooms, they do, and they've seen massive growth there. And but they're being lumped in sentiment wise with the wider, you know, leisure sector, and so sometimes you can get some really good outperformers because of that. Card Factory is probably a victim of that being lumped in with the retail sector,
precisely.
And all of a sudden it comes out with some decent figures, and you go, oh, in fact, they're not suffering that much. So you're going to be very selective, but there's opportunities there, isn't there? You know.
Yeah, yeah. So, Brian, I mean, it's an interesting sector. That's why we commissioned this. I commissioned this. Got Victor to write this. Excellent piece, but you know, it was really sort of popping into a Loungers that made me think, ooh, this is quite interesting.
What is it, Lounge? They've opened a 200 lounge.
Lounges, yeah. So Cozy Club's another brand they have, which is, again, really nice. Brightside is roadside diners. You know, a lot of people staycationing and, you know, want somewhere nice to eat by the side of the road and don't really fancy Burger King on the M4. Really? You know, this is them. So they're sort of conceptual. They're really nicely decorated. You know, I think I remember
Are these them?
Yeah, this is them. And I think the story is something like the guy wanted to recreate the feeling of being in his, you know, grand's living room or something. like that. Yeah. So if you look in the background, the decor is, you know, that's sort of kitsch. Let's call it like, you know, 60s, 50s, 60s kitsch. They're really nice. The menus are great. So I thought, ooh, this is good. And they're always busy. So yeah, really, really nice. And, you know, 200th opening of a lounge, but it reckons there's this capacity for 600 in the market. And I think that might be true. So there's the rollout story. The difficulties is that, you know, kitting these things out, expanding these chains cost money, so they tend to have a lot of debt sitting behind them as well. You've got to understand their ability to service their debt.
I haven't looked into Card Factory, but I'd be surprised if it could double. Like I said, you're going from almost, you know, 360 million to 700 million. I don't know if they can do that. It's a big ask. I mean, if you want to double, you must go to the market cap a little bit and look at smaller companies, essentially. I mean, I'm not saying that all the time. There's big companies can do that, but so retailers are very hard to do that. What else on the front page here? So we've got Paul Beggia, Argent. Paul covers Argentex and Bellascura. They've both had results out, both gone down. I mean, I think Bellascura is a lot because it's travelled recently quite well. They're still in the phase of commercialization, and so when you have, you know, the tires hit the road kind of thing, the tires hit tarmac, and you get results, even though they're historic, they're thinking, well, hang on, they've only got like 400,000 of revenue here, they've had 150 million. But yeah, we you know, they're yet to commercialize, are they? So I mean, they haven't
there's some really, you know, interesting signs that The commercialization will start to happen now. $15 million pre-order for these portable oxygen concentrators. Got some really good manufacturing partners, JV there, and, you know, it's a very good distribution in place. McKesson, big, you know, American medical supplies company. So, you know, there's a lot of good stuff going on.
Look at that there. If you look at that sort of previous sort of support there, broke down through that, then it's tried to get above that sort of 41 pence. It's pretty much come down to that now. So it'd be nice if it just hangs around there. That shows that resistance or support will previously hold. It is on the 200-day moving average exactly, but this is a good trend. It's breaking up. Argentex, I do like these. I held these a while back when they sort of did the Golden Cross, and I what's it? AGFX. Now, everything was good about this, apart from an outlook. And I bought them around about here, I think, or here. They gapped up. I didn't get as much as they wanted. And they gapped up on a trading update. And I held them. It started rolling over a bit. So I got out. I don't know why I got out. I thought about
them. It's a good company. There's no doubt about it.
Margins are great. Everything's growth is great. The only thing that they said here, I mean, everything else was very good here, but if you look at the outlook, there's a line in the outlook there we are. Despite more challenging trading conditions post-period end, the group continues to deliver double-digit growth of the revenues, whilst the core UK corporate currency management business remained resilient. Our institutional and European divisions have more recently experienced a greater seasonal reduction in market activity. So as long as that's seasonal, it's not too worrying. But that's the only thing I could sort of see that was negative there. But they're down 10% on that. But they are a good business. I mean, they are growing very well. They're generating cash. Their margins are very good. I think there's one there, a bit of opportunity there. Once that sort of settles down and finds a level here, that's a good sign. In fact, look at that, right in the gap there. We gapped up last time, look, right on that level there. It may have to close that gap.
You know, uptrends are never, you know, they're never always in one direction. Yeah. You know, this is a company nibbling away at the markets it operates in, taking share, you know, adding a lot of customers. So, that, you know, the thing that I thought was a very respectable number is it added 305 new clients in the first half.
Yeah.
You know, but there's a lot more potential clients out there. So, you know, keep nibbling away at market share. You're going to get these ups and downs in you know, sort of general market activity. A share price here looks to me like, you know, there was people getting very excited about a particularly buoyant period and chasing the shares a bit too high. Rather than sort of slow and steady progress. There was, you know, we've had huge volatility, huge uncertainty in FX markets, and that reflects that, and everything's sort of calmed down a bit now.
Yeah, but it'll continue to happen though. I mean, you know, interest rates, even though they're going to be steady for a long time here, they're changing all around the world. Maybe the typical hedge is US dollar cable, you know, and pound sterling, but that's going to change. You know, America may come down fast and us, we may pause. It's always going to change a little bit.
It was ever thus, and there will be conditions again where, you know, where customers, you know, really, really seek out the best possible deals they can get, the best possible service they can get. And Argentex is in a good place to pick them up when sort of FX volatility comes back a bit.
I like this company. They are on my watch list. I'll be watching them at their updates very closely because I do think there's potential here going forward. They're growing. They're still growing top line very much. All it was about that seasonality line and took them down 10%.
Doesn't take much in this market.
What's Live Company doing? They're suspended or something, but they're almost red there. There's a K-Pops Lux London. They do events and all that. They're into Lego and all that stuff, events, but it's been postponement. IOG, operational corporate update. I looked at this, 31% down. So they give up a sort of bullish picture up here, and then you come here and said, however, that however word is never good, is it? Stable production, Blythe 2, 97% operating efficiency. This is, however, the H2 production seen natural decline and realized day ahead gas price remaining far below last year's levels. The company's financial position remains challenging. That's not what you want to hear.
Not a good line. As I've said before, I'll say it again, you know, oil and gas companies are plays on the underlying commodity price.
They're gambling.
Not gambling.
As investors. But look at that.
But it's sort of gravity. You can't escape the gravity of the market you're in. So if gas prices have retreated from super normal levels that we saw, you know, over a year ago, then
yeah, I don't mean the production profits companies. Are going to disappear. Companies producing is not gambling.
But it is producing.
I'm talking about when I say this gambling. I'm talking about wildcat oil drill plays. When you're putting money into that, I think all investing is gambling. It's all about odds. Now those kind of wildcat drill plays are like backing a second favorite. You know, a 5-10 to 1 chance. What's the point of doing that?
There's been some very successful, you know, examples of companies, you know, drilling.
Yeah, but that's the odds. That's the odds. If you look at the chance of success, they'll boast if the chance of success is a third, one in three. They'll put that in their RNS. Not this company, most companies. So even that's a good chance. That means two times out of three, you're wrong. So why would you want to do that? And that's why when you go for like a
company you might.
Going towards. Yeah, but even then, you won't get three times the uplift, generally. You're better off playing odds on companies that have a good balance sheet, they're starting to generate cash, because the risk isn't there, the downside risk isn't there as much as here. And in fact, even this, you know, if you just pay attention to the 200-day moving average, and let's take everything else out, right? And you wouldn't get into any stock if you took the 200-day moving average out, and look at that. You wouldn't get into this. That's not an uptrend at all. I don't know what you're playing with this. You wouldn't bother with it. You'd only get into it when it goes above that. Or, you know, it's good. So it's in a massive downtrend. And it's been in that since pretty much September last year, October. So,
yeah. Did I know somewhere in that statement they're going to change their name? No. Sorry, they're talking about the broker changed their name. That's right. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
I know someone else changed their name. Wasn't it? Merged with, can't remember who, and became Cavendish.
Yeah, Mode is changing their name. They've been rallying crazy. They went to go from, you know, almost going bust because they've changed their business now from being a loyalty sort of Bitcoin earner. You shop through their platform and you got crypto. But they've changed that now. I think they're going to acquire some kind of business. But they're changing their name to R8 Capital Investment.
Catchy.
Yeah. I don't know what that is. I mean, Mode is when you get a near death pair of that, and it comes back from the dead. Look at that huge destruction of value there. But nevertheless, in recent times, it's gone from literally 0.5 to 2.7. That's like a five bagger. It's like just on the fact that it's not going to die. So there are those plays out there. What else is there? Quickly on the thing. Have you come any rise here on the beach? Is there? Feedback, is there? You tracked the feedback.
I did, yeah, video up on site now. We spoke about it yesterday, I won't go into it again.
No, I like it though. I listened to it. I like it. I like the fact that they're saying that essentially they have tested with smaller sort of NHS trusts. And what I liked about this is that WhatsApp has now come under scrutiny, being used by surgeons. It's not fit for purpose. It shouldn't be used.
It's
a big tip.
I can't remember. Information Commissioner's Office. You know, it's a GDPR thing, and quite right too.
And essentially saying that they're on the edge of maybe signing a big one, of course, that you never know that's going to happen, but on the edge of maybe having national adoption somewhere, which is quite nice, because so far they've had local regional sort of trusts using testing their, and as yet, commercial rollout may happen. This is a company I've never understood, right? This company, Starcom, they're called, Track IoT. They've always, and I don't see how they've done this, they also have massive potential contracts, and none of them ever seem to land. They'll sign a contract ahead of terms or something. There's a potential for this is millions. And then never seen. And they've said they noticed the results. And they did say, to date, not produced the orders that's failed to perform. So these are distribution deals.
I've never heard of this company.
Well, it used to be called Starcom. But they've always promised big contracts about the land. They never do. And I think, how long can you? But then, further order 2000. They sign these deals, order. They never seem to come to fruition. I don't understand how it's allowed, essentially.
I'll keep that one off my watch list.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, a little bit of news today I thought it was interesting. Hornby.
Go on, Hornby.
So, you know, this.
Now, what do they do now? Because I just thought Hornby was the old railway stuff. Went bankrupt, I thought it was.
It was rescued. It was bought out by a company called Phoenix Asset Management, which is a turnaround specialist. They own about 70-odd% of the shares now, but there's still a bit that's traded publicly. But you know, this is a classic riches to rags story. You know, it was the toys that every boy wanted, Scalextrics, Airfix, you know, through the generations.
Not keeping up with the times, it's been like a Wilco story, but not keeping up with the times, have they?
Yeah.
That's why you've seen this chart go down like that, I suppose.
And they often, but it's about 2015 where they really started to hit the buffers. You know, when really sort of, you know, internet usage and video gaming came into its own, and that was one of the factors they blamed on. Their poor performance on, increasingly poor performance on, and then kids were just not interested in toy trains anymore. You know, their older customer base was dying off, and people wanted to play Grand Theft Auto rather than the Le Mans Scale Electric and watch the trains go around the track. And you know, there may be some truth to that. The statement today, it's an AGM statement, you know, seem to be, you know, clawing their way back very slowly. And, you know, I would sort of counter the idea that people, you know, kids don't want to play with physical toys anymore by looking at Games Workshop, which is very much about, you know, a physical thing, a toy that people love. People have gone mad for these things. Now, what Hornby have done recently, they bought a 25% stake in a company called Warlord Games.
Yeah.
Which is sort of tabletop gaming. I think it's like historical gaming more than sort of fantasy gaming like Games Workshop. But games is big business, you know, board games and such the like. So they've still got all these old brands. They've got Corgi, Airfix, Hornby. Yeah, there are still enthusiasts out there. But I think this Warlord acquisition is quite smart, and I think it's worth keeping an eye on because you know, if it can replicate even a fraction of Games Workshop success and tap into the board game market, which is huge, then you know, there might be some light at the end of the tunnel here. No pun intended.
Yeah, but like I said, hopefully they do. But it's with games, you've got to have a hit, haven't you? And then all of a sudden, what's good with the computer games these days? If you get a hit, then you can have a sequel to that game. You know, that's why I like computer games, because one of the companies I own, Truefin, they've got a games play stack, and they've had one of the big hits, and they've got sort of a million units from get go on this game, and now they're releasing a sequel to that. But already they've got a million people, you know, on the fan base now. It went from nothing, but so as long as they get a hit, equals nice rises there after market has thought about yesterday's results. Yes, it is up today. I agree, small all stocks drilling for oil is a binary bet with the odds against you. Most of the low-hanging fruit is gone now. Oil is getting hard to find. If you want a great insight into Hornby, check out Phil Oakley's Sharescope article. It's a brilliant insight. Yeah.
Yes, he did.
It could turn around, but they have to have that winner, don't they? They have to have a couple of winners there. They need some games that are popular. And how do you get on real games of that? How do you get, I mean, Game Workshop does it, I suppose, but how do you get recurring revenue?
Well,
with digital games, you can do it.
Well, you can do it with board games as well. It's exactly what Games Workshop do. I mean, how many variations of Warhammer are there? I mean, there are absolutely, you know, thousands of variants, thousands of new characters that can be introduced. And I was just having a look at Warlord's site now. Actually, it's worth a look. It's
Warlord. Is it
store.warlordgames.com. Warlordgames.com. Warlord Games. Store.warlordgames.com. This looks fun.
Okay, I can see why this would be appeal to certain anoraks.
It certainly would, but you know,
there's plenty of anoraks
in the world. I like, look at this,
the nerd anorak market is very big. I mean, that's what Game Workshop does, you know, it's essentially huge. So that's a good idea if they can sort of pile into that and get a small percentage of that.
If you want. You know, because I am a nerd myself, obviously, hence the June T-shirt. Click on that tab that says 2018. Now I'm excited.
Where?
There, 2018, right in the middle.
Oh,
now I'm excited.
Oh, there. Judge Dredd and all that stuff.
Oh, right. So I need to go shopping, Justin. Time to hang up.
Just for this one, quick bit of stories. GDP here, but Paul Zoe says, a mild recession could be happening. But I think you expect the Bank of England still to raise rates. So it's starting to look, in fact, look at the bonds today, and that's a reflection, of course, of, where are we, bonds. The thing, we are now just rolling over a little bit here, now coming down about 5% on the bonds. So it's seeming like we are closer to the peak there of figures. And also, this is quite nice. This is on a pessimistic but optimistic thing. This is in Reuters today. Long-term gloom about Britain's economy appears to be lifting, and some investors can reckon the end of extreme pessimism is near, with gains ahead for UK-focused businesses and the more international but long-shunned FTSE. So basically, we've said for a while, you know, that people are starting to come round saying, hang on, you know, the American markets or the big caps have rallied. The UK hasn't, you know. It's still quite cheap. And so he says, it feels like we've passed peak pessimism. This is Daniel Lockyer, senior fund manager at £7 billion investment group. And he said, we don't necessarily need to see a big, huge bout of positive news, but the trend of negativity is slowing. And the key to making money in any market is to get in the bottom and capture the start of the turnaround. Yeah.
There's one thing I agree that peak pessimism in the UK is, you know, is that's there possibly. I don't necessarily think you have to get it at the bottom. I like to see taking hold. But yeah, I mean, there's so many beaten up UK shares. And, you know, when you see the headlines that, you know, the UK market's on its knees and everyone's delisting and it's dying and blah, 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 you probably know that you know, the worst is past us. That said, I think, you know, a lot more could be done to encourage, you know, people in the UK to take more interest in the stock market and invest sensibly. Hopefully we're doing that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's have a quick look at I know the Equals chart. So it's broken above where we said yesterday it's struggling to get that about that pound level, but look today, there we are. Finally it's broken above that sort of resistance line, which is quite nice. It's getting up there, so hopefully we're going to see a new trend. It may have to go a little bold figure here. That's starting to break out. See, above the previous high. So as long as it stays above that, that's very good. So well done to Equals holders. And don't forget, if you like this, share it, please. Get someone else to watch it. And then and subscribe. And we'll carry on doing it. Speak tomorrow, man. Cheers. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.